That's a trivia question. And then I was thinking, tell me what you think. We mentioned last time whether we should discuss more topics alike, and I was thinking maybe in light of the fact that next week is Tisha B'Av, and we should talk a little bit about Tisha B'Av, and I have a fake segue from this topic into Tisha B'Av to pretend that it's flowing from one topic to the next, if that works for everybody here. So we'll do that. We'll say a few more points about the point, and then we'll artificially connect it into Tisha B'Av, and maybe talk about that a little bit. And then we'll see what we're holding. So essentially, when we talk about practicalities, what is the Vilna Gaon Shita and what is Rabbeinu Tam Shita, the way the Achron have understood it. So what it seems to basically correspond to is that, as the way the later Sfarim explain, is that we know that Tzei Sekel Chavim means three stars. A little bit of a question how big the stars are for different purposes. Small stars, which is going to be a later shear because it's harder to see small stars. Big stars would be earlier. Beinonim would be somewhere in the middle, average sized stars. So that's one of the questions which the earlier some already talked about, using different sized stars for different times. But maybe the question is also, where are the stars? So some of the Sfarim explain that according to the Vilna Gaon, the stars are in the middle of the sky. And according to the Rabbeinu Tam view, it's going to be on the western horizon. And on the western horizon is going to take the longest to get to that point because the sun sets in the west, so it's light for the longest in the west. So waiting to the point where you can see stars on the western horizon means a later point in time. So in other words, they're both going to have to correlate to a certain astronomical reality, and the astronomical reality which itself correlates to something the Gemara had mentioned, this idea of Tzei Sekel Chavim referring to visibility of stars. So that's presumably how it plays out. So we call the Vilna Gaon Shita, let's say, in terms of Shabbos or something like that, is going to get us somewhere around, let's say, 35 minutes, and various shuls have different them and hug them, how exactly to calculate it, but it's somewhere around that range, and that's understood to be the Vilna Gaon's position. So Kriya Shema is also the right, so we're usually a little more machmir for that also, in terms of saying Shema at around the time that is similar to when we would be similar to when we would end Shabbos.
But nowadays, in that instance that I gave, which is very common, you daven Maariv at 8:25, 8:30, even 8:35, which is 20 minutes, 25 minutes after Shkia. If your shul ends Shabbos, usually 40 minutes, 42, 50 minutes, so really if you say Shema any time before your shul ends Shabbos, you should repeat Shema?
Presumably, they're both deraisa for the most part. Although, you know, Shema, Shabbos is the most chomer because it's a lav and it's a skila, so one could argue Shabbos is more chomer than anything, but at the same time, it also makes sense to put Shema probably in the same category, if not exactly the same category, especially because it doesn't hurt to wait a few minutes. There's nothing to lose from being machmer, but on the surface, it would seem that Shema should have the same status as ending Shabbos. As opposed, perhaps, to Tanesim, which we'll talk about in a second, that'll be part of our segue into Tisha B'Av. But just to mention two or three more points about this, the point about Tzei Sekel Chavim is interesting, just from a Lamdashah perspective. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has a little observation about this in the beginning of his Shirim on Pesachim, where the first half of Pesachim talks about night in terms of Bedikas Chametz, and there is a discussion there about what word means night and the like, and the Bukhanan has a discussion about what does it mean when we say that night correlates to three stars. So to use the classical Lumdish language, is that what we call a simen or is it a siba? In other words, is that the reason or is that an indication of what's going on? Is three stars the definition of night, that somehow when you can see three stars it becomes night? Or do we assume that no, that night is independently defined, but we can identify night by a clue? The clue is the three stars. And one of the Sfarim that they published from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he points out that it's theoretically sometimes possible to see stars during the daytime. So he thinks it can't be that stars are the definition of night, that stars within the context of darkness are a clue to night. That not that that's when night is, but that is an indication that night has come, for whatever intents and purposes that may make a difference. There was, in terms of this whole question of when Shki is and when Seis is and what Bein HaShmashos is and what the Machlokas is about, there was a fascinating tshuva, I thought a very interesting tshuva, from Rav Ozna, Shlita, Rav Ozna in the Tshuva Shevet HaLevi. So he has a perspective on what this Machlokas is about, just from a conceptual point of view. And he suggests that the Rebbeinu Tam and the Gaonim are arguing about what the suffix is about, what the suffix is about Bein HaShmashos in general. Right? The Gemara already pegged Bein HaShmashos as a suffix, said that it's a twilight zone, it's a mysterious time. And some of the Lois Farm explains, such as I mentioned before, there was Va, who says that it's inherently ambiguous. It's not that it's either night or day, we don't know which, but that it's inherently a mixture, it's inherently a suffix. And later on, the Maharal of Prague has a similar language where he suggests that it's all one big taruvus, one big mysterious creation. So Rav Ozna notes that that really only makes sense according to the Vilna Gaon's position. If we're talking about the period of time where we see the light transition into dark, so that I could hear that this is some type of ambiguous period where we don't know how to label it. But when we're looking at a Rabbeinu Tam period, when it's been pitch black for a while, the way we see things, so he says he thinks he's got to be dealing with a different kind of suffix. And he suggests a fascinating conceptual point, and he applies it in a halachic context. He has a halachic difference between these two understandings. He says that's one way to view the question. One way to view the question is, how do we see this mysterious period? How do we classify it? Do we classify it as night and day or something in the middle? While the second way of seeing the suffix is that, not that it's all a mixture, but that we know that somewhere between point A and point B, it transitioned into night. But we can't peg when that minute is. So however long we call the period of Bein HaShmashos, let's say within Rabbeinu Tam's view it's a 72-minute period, but more within a version of Rabbeinu Tam, it's a 4-mil period, whatever that means, let's say 72 minutes. So somewhere within those 72 minutes, day transitions into night. And we just don't know which one of the 72 minutes it is. So we essentially have to view the whole period as questionable, as possibly day or possibly night, because we don't know which one of those 72 minutes is the minute that it transitioned from one to the next. So he has an interesting halachic ramification of those two understandings. So let's say it's Yom Tov, and it's Bein HaShmashos of Afuke Yom, it's Bein HaShmashos going out of Yom Tov. It's heading towards Motzei Yom Tov. And you want to know, can you cook in that time? To eat right away. You want to cook something to eat right away. So is that permissible or not?
Maybe a chana on Yom Tov after Yom Tov.
So that's the question. Right, so are you allowed to cook during that time to eat right away? Since we know you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov to eat on Yom Tov, but you can't cook on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. So he suggests that within the first question, that it's a suffix time. So one could argue that all of Bein HaShmashos has the same status. So maybe you should be able to cook because Mimonoshas. Either it's, either you're right, either Yantif or not Yantif or something in between. So whatever it is, you're cooking now, either you're cooking on Yantif or Yantif, or you're cooking after Yantif for after Yantif. But whatever it is, it shouldn't be a problem. It should be okay. While if we say that at some point it transitions, we just don't know when. So then there's the risk that you're cooking on Yom Tov or after Yom Tov, and then one would view that question l'chumra. So it's an interesting perspective. I think it's both interesting in terms of his conceptual understanding of the machlokas. It also sheds some light on why Rabbeinu Tam's view gives us a really different type of question than the Vilna Gaon's type of Bein HaShmashos. Apparently the suffix of Bein HaShmashos is a different kind of suffix according to the two understandings. Helps us to live a little bit with Rabbeinu Tam's putting the point at a point which is clearly way after it's pitch black, and also has maybe that halachic ramification. Just mention one more point about that. Sternbach has an essay, a very practical question for some people, not for us over here, but let's say you live in Alaska, or you live in some place in the world where it's light for long periods of time, for months at a time. So what do you do in terms of transitioning from one day to the next? So this is important also because we mentioned defining night has two broad realms of relevance. On the one hand, nighttime mitzvos, and on the other hand, transitioning from one day to the next. We need to know when the clock, when the calendar changes, when does Monday turn into Tuesday, when does Friday turn into Shabbos, etc., etc. So he assumes that at whatever point the where you are is farthest from the sun, that'll be the point of transition, even regardless of what the sky looks like. If it's going to be bright for many months, then just whatever point you are farthest from the sun, it transitions. But it's because the earth is still rotating, right? So where you are, so normally it's dark here because where we are right now is farthest from the sun. So we can't, the way the earth is rotating, when Teaneck is farthest from the sun, that's the middle of the night. And the reality of that is it's going to be the middle of the time when it's pitch black outside. But if you're in a certain point very far north, it may be that you'll go months without it ever being dark. So then when does it transition? So it transitions. The mice at that point still rotates away from the sun. It just doesn't end up being so dark. So then that's going to be the time when we transition. In terms of nighttime mitzvos, he suggests maybe there is not going to be an applicability for nighttime mitzvos. This is with a possible exception of Kriya Shema, because that was a question we discussed at the outset, that Shema correlates to night and day, but strictly speaking, that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says, "Tishach b'cha v'kumecha." So we assume that there is a correlation, which may not be 100%, as we discussed a little bit, and Gemara is going to talk about it a little bit more. So it's especially not likely to be 100% if you're in a place where there's no night. If you're in a place where there's no night, human beings still have to sleep. So then Tishach b'cha perhaps is going to have a definition really independent of darkness, and then you have to figure out exactly what it is, but it could be that it'll have an independent definition. So to kind of segue a little bit into Tisha B'Av, and maybe talk about that a little bit, but we'll use an entry point from this discussion. So let's talk about both first the end for a minute, then the beginning. That, as you mentioned, so when you decide Tisha B'Av is, since it's subject to machlokes, so there are all different ways in which one could evaluate it. And for the purposes of, let's say, Shabbos, so on the one hand, maybe you'll be machmer for Rabbeinu Tam, and you'll wait till somewhere between 72 minutes or 90 minutes or however you calculate for mil. But maybe you'll follow the Vilna Gaon, like we said, like Roy Willigan and Beshechter and others decide the Vilna Gaon is a dominant view. But even, as we were saying a few minutes ago, even within the Vilna Gaon, you have to figure out exactly what that means. So if we assume it means essentially three stars in the center of the sky, it's probably not going to be 13 and a half minutes. It could be something closer to 35 minutes or something like that. And within that view, we're going to take a relatively stringent position because it is a question of Chil Shabbos. This is a big deal, so we're going to take the relatively machmir position within that view, even not necessarily being machmir for Beit Tam per se, but in terms of what the Vilna Gaon's position means. But what about in terms of ending at Tainus? So let's say in terms of ending Shavasa B'Tamas. So does that have the same definition? Does Shavasa B'Tamas end the same time as, so this year was a Tuesday night? Did it end the same time Shabbos did 2 days before, 4 days before? So every shul has different times, but probably not, probably a few minutes earlier. So what goes into that decision? So on the one hand, you could have argued it should be a lot earlier. Maybe it should end at Shkia. Because why is it that we end Shabbos at Tzitzit HaChavim, right, and we start Shabbos at Shkia? Because since that whole period between Shkia and Tzitzit, so Shabbos is Daraisa, we have to be Machmir. So therefore, on Friday we start at the beginning of the period, just in case it's the earlier time. And on Shabbos we end at the end of the period, just in case it's the later time. Okay, so we're Machmir on both, because Shabbos is Daraisa. But the average time is, let's say, Shavasa V'Tamas, is a Derabbanan. And so if it's a Derabbanan, and we'll discuss in the course of talking about Tisha B'Av in a few minutes, there's maybe some reason to question whether it's really a Derabbanan, but let's assume for now it seems like it's a Derabbanan. So then, why don't we have the right to be Makel? Let's say that we don't have to wait till Seif, we should wait until Shkia. So it happens to be that that's not what's brought down, that the Rishonim and the Gemara has an expression. It's going to sound like it's saying the opposite, but the Rishonim understand it differently. That's a confusing language in light of the terminology. The Gemara says that kol tainis shlo shaka alav chama lav shmei tainis. In order for it to be considered a full tainis, it has to have shaka alav chama, the sun has to sink. So that language, shaka, shki, it's the same word. So on the surface, you think it means shki. But the Rishonim pretty much unanimously explain that no, that means Tesek Ochavim, that I guess even though Shkia, we understand that to mean the sinking from the beginning of the sinking, so here it means the sun has sunk, it's over, and therefore it's meaning, it's a reference to Tesek Ochavim. So Rishonim understand it, that basically the definition of a tainus, according to the Gemara, is that the sun not has started to sink, but has sunk, and therefore is Tesek Ochavim. However, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is a Shabbos Tesek Ochavim. That it could mean that since there's a range of views, even within the Vilna Gaon's position, let's say, how to understand Tesek Ochavim, that we could take a more lenient view. For example, not the, say, three average-sized stars, but maybe three large stars, which maybe are going to be visible earlier, and that's why, for example, for a tainus, you may have many views that would peg the ending of a tainus different than the Shabbos that was a few days before, because we're not necessarily going to have the same motivation to be machna. Parenthetically, while we're talking about this, I'll mention another issue that came up this year. It also draws upon the same questions. When we met a few months ago, we spoke about the Tzatzah Shabbos, and we also mentioned recently that almost every yontif has a quirk in terms of Tosefta Shabbos, that theoretically you're supposed to bring in every yontif early, but almost every yontif there is some type of shiloh that comes out, right? So Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in a sense, and the first day of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, and the first day of Pesach and the second day of Pesach and Shavuos all have quirks. Each one has its own individual shiloh. So one of them is the first day of Sukkot. So there is a chumrah that the Ramah brings that for the first day of Sukkot one should reflect the fact that there is a linkage, a hekesh, between Sukkot and Pesach, and that on Pesach night, we assume because of the mitzvah of matzah and other Pesach Seder night mitzvos, that they require actual night, and that's why we don't start the Seder until it's actually dark, until Tesek Ochavim on Pesach night. So too, you shouldn't have your meal in the Sukkah, the first night of Sukkot, until Tesek Ochavim. So the Shiloh came up this year, if you recall, in this neighborhood, in this area in Teaneck and related places, that there were major rainstorms expected for the first night of Sukkot. And that majorly complicated things. I think, if I remember correctly, checking the forecast on the internet, at 7 o'clock that night it said there's a 10% chance for precipitation, and at 8 o'clock it went up to like a 90% chance of precipitation. So I know it's a complicated point, because on the first night of Sukkot we don't have the option of saying it's raining when we eat inside. That's the one night of Sukkot when we have to try to eat in the Sukkah, and if it rains we're going to end up waiting. So then it's a question, how much do we want to, on the one hand, go for the chumrah of the Ramah to wait till it's dark while potentially sacrificing, or at least greatly complicating, the mitzvah of eating in the Sukkah the first night, which we won't be able to do if it's raining. So I thought, for a number of reasons, we'll go into all of them now because not all of them are relevant, but I thought there was a major case to be made for starting the meal pretty much right away, right after davening or prompt time and starting the meal right away, which is what I told Manas Balam. And among the various cheshbonos, I remember I was discussing the issue also with Rabbi Bar Simon at the time, and he also mentioned that even if one does want to be machmir for the Ramah's position, so it doesn't mean that you need a Motzei Shabbos to say Sukkot. This says a chumrah. Presumably, one could take a more lenient view of say Sukkot, which I think he said, let's say 25 minutes after Shkia would probably be the most lenient view to take. So even within the chumrah of the Ramah, it wouldn't necessarily mean waiting until the same time you would have made Havdalah, but 25 minutes after Shkia would be sufficient. And it was a very practical issue, because that was threatening to rain, and indeed that's what happened. And if you were waited for Motzei Shabbos time, you ended up not being able to start the meal on time. It was a relevant issue. So the point being that this, even within whichever definition you pick, the Vilna Gaon or Benetam, there's still variations in terms of what it means, and for different halachic purposes, it may have different applications. So for a Tainus, we don't necessarily end it at the same time as ending Shabbos. So what about Tisha B'Av? So Tisha B'Av is a little more complex, and also Tisha B'Av brings up another question, because every other Tainus, so we observe starting in the morning, and as we've alluded to, the morning has different cheshbonos. But in terms of the night, the issue doesn't come up. We don't talk about Shabbos B'Tamas or Asar B'Teves. We don't talk about whether to start it at Shkia or Teis, because we don't start it at night. But when it comes to...
We don't have thing that it does start at night.
So that maybe in terms of the Haggis of 3 weeks. Right, and we'll talk about that a little bit. It's relevant to what we'll discuss. But in terms of the Tainus, as a Tainus, we don't start at night. So the question doesn't come up. Should we start it at Shkia or should we start it at Seis? Because we could have said, like we mentioned a minute ago, that you could have thought the Tainus should end at Shkia. So maybe if it was a nighttime process, or let's say Tisha B'Av, maybe you would think it should be 23 hours long. Maybe we should start at Seis. It could be Makel to start at a later time, the inverse of Shabbos. And maybe we should be Makel to end at Shkia. So we don't do that. So we explained already why when it comes to ending, we end at Seis, not Shkia. So what about the beginning time? And so when it comes to Tisha B'Av, which starts at night, so maybe we should be makel and say that we don't have to start at Shkia. Let's start at Seis. So we started at Rabbeinu Tam Seis. Get a little food in before starting. Now clearly that's not what we do. Why don't we do that? So that's a discussion the Gemara has in the Sefer Pesachim. The Gemara raises the question: Tisha B'Av Bein Hashmashel Shelo Aser or Mutter? How do we classify? How do we view this twilight zone of Tisha B'Av? It's basically this question: does the Tainus start at the beginning of the Ben Hashmashos time, or does it start at the end of the Ben Hashmashos time? Does it start at Shkia, or does it start at Seis?
Using the dictum of the Gemara, the Talmud, you said earlier that it's not a fast unless it's gone through a sun
setting. Right.
So if you do it at the beginning, mm-hmm. you start early. You've done your sun setting, so maybe
right, about an hour in. You know, by the time the face comes at night, you've fasted
you
for an hour.
Do it twice.
Right. That would be quite a cooler. Yeah.
Followed what the Gemara said.
Right, that's true. But usually it means that the sun has set after having fasted. Yeah, I know. It's a shame that they keep getting it. Otherwise, the technicality. So we start. Say so the Gemara says that Tisha B'Av with Ben Hashmashos says Aser, and the question is why should that be? Right, why should it be that we should be machmir when it comes to Tisha B'Av? Ostensibly, it seems like Tisha B'Av is a din d'rabbanan, and if it's din d'rabbanan, why shouldn't we have the right to be makel and say, okay, this suffix time, let's start at the end of the suffix time and pick it up from there. So that'll be our entree into the broader question of Tisha B'Av. We'll start talking about Tisha B'Av as a whole, and we'll come back to this question after it'll take us a little while to explain, but hold off on this question and come back to it. Why is it that the Gemara could take a stance that we should be machmir on Tisha B'Av rather than Nagel? So what is Tisha B'Av about? L'maisa, Tisha B'Av is a day of Chumrah to begin with. It's a day of Chumrah which is hard to understand on the surface, because strictly speaking, it's part of a unit where the other members of the unit are not treated the same way. So Tisha B'Av is part of a four Tanesim, which are commemorative of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? The average observant Jew fasts 6 days a year if he's not fasting on Zayin Adar and Bahab and whatever else. So that being the case, then you have Yom Kippur, which is clearly its own category. You have Tanis Esther, which is also its own category. So outside of those two, you have
Gedalia.
Right, so outside of Tanis Esther and Yom Kippur, you have four Tanesim, which are all about the Beis HaMikdash. Some Gedalia, Asar B'Teves, Shavasa B'Tamas, and Tisha B'Av. So one would think that those four should be treated equally. We should do the same thing. They're all the same practice. But Maisa, we know that's not the case, that the other three Tanaitim are observed only during the daytime hours. And all we abstain from, and really the only relevant halacha to those days, other than changes in davening, the only relevant halacha to those days is abstaining from eating and drinking, which counts as one inuyim. That's one of the five inuyim. The other four inuyim are permitted, and we only fast during the daytime. And yet, Tisha B'Av clearly is treated very differently than when it comes to Tisha B'Av, so it's a 25-hour experience. The first point we said, we have to figure out why that is. And, well, why 25 as opposed to 23, but also why is it nighttime at all? But also, it's not just one inui, it's all five inuyim are all prohibited on Tisha B'Av. So why is that? So this point will definitely take us a few days, at least more than one day to explain, but we'll start to explain now in a few minutes we have left. One aspect of this issue is addressed by the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yuchas. And the Gemara says that Shiny Tisha B'Av is different from the other Tanaisim, Ho'il v'huchpulu b'hatzaris, because the tragedies of that day were huchpulu, means doubled, were multiplied. So what does that mean? So as Tosfos notes, you can't just say that it means many bad things happened on Tisha B'Av, because that is true also of Shavuot of the Thomas. Right, so if we're saying it's just about more than one thing happening, it wouldn't explain the difference between Shavuot of the Thomas and Tisha B'Av. So Tosfos has two perspectives. One is Shiny Churban Beis HaMikdash D'Chamer Tveh, and Tisha B'Av is different because the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is a more severe tragedy. And the other is Shiny Tisha B'Av Ho'o V'Huchpulu Bo Tzara'achas. Tisha B'Av is different because the same thing happened twice. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happened twice. That's what's significant and sets Tisha B'Av apart. Okay, that's one element of the issue. There's going to be a lot still to explain about that, but this process is an important part of the discussion. It's also interesting that the Gemara Maseches Megillah and Daf Hey, so the Gemara talks about Rabbi, author of the Mishnayos, that Rabbi apparently wanted to be Oker Tisha B'Av, wanted to uproot Tisha B'Av. It's language we used last week, talking about Kiras Davim and HaTorah. So here we find that again, Rabbi wanted to be Oker Tisha B'Av. A shocking kind of thing. So we could ask the question just emotionally, you know, wasn't Rabbi Jewish? Didn't he feel what Tisha B'Av was about? So Tosfos asked the question a little more technically. Tosfos says, don't we believe? Doesn't the Gemara say, Kol HaMisabel Al Yushalayim Zoch Avrov Nechem Asa, that if you want to see the future comfort of Yushalayim, you have to first go through the Avelus of Yushalayim? How could he want to get rid of Tisha B'Av? So Tosfos has two suggestions. One suggestion is that he wanted to get rid of the chumras, that he felt that it should be treated the same way as the other Tanaisim. And the other answer they have is that he didn't want to get rid of Tisha B'Av, but he wanted to change the date, which of course would change the name of Tisha B'Av, that he sided with Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says in the Maseches Tainis, that Rabbi Yochanan had said, "Omale havoy hasam." If I had been there when the Rabbanan got together and declared a status to Tisha B'Av, Kavasil Basara, I would have differed. I would have said, "I vote against the 9th of Av. I think the 10th of Av is the date to pick." And his view didn't win, and the 9th of Av was picked. Why did he pick the 10th of Av? Because Rubo Shel Heichal Nisraf, most of the destruction happened on the 10th, so therefore he thought that was a more significant day. It's an interesting question, the Maisa, so why does the majority view hold it should be the 9th? He's got a good point that most of the destruction happened on the 10th. So a lot of the Achronim, the Arsameach, and the Sofer, and the Soloveitchik all felt the same point, that this has to do with the Gemara of Adazara and the Afton Invasion and the Pasuk. Volvo preached in the Chalua that when the invaders came, so they, from that moment of breaching the Beis HaMikdash, they desanctified, they lost its Kedusha as soon as it was invaded. So then, as they say, whatever happened after that initial invasion is bias sarif sarif. It was like a burnt building that was continuing to burn. So that's of less interest to us. That's the destruction, so to speak, in terms of the sanctity of Beis HaMikdash happened in the first moment, and what happened afterwards is a technicality, is less significant to us. So that's how they explain that a lot of the Achronim explain why it is the ninth one. Yavin Yezer and others raise an interesting point, which we'll see if we have time to quickly explain now, that Rabbi Yochanan, maybe you would have thought, would also have agreed, because there is a well-known Gemara in the second parak of Bava Kamma, and the Gemara discusses Esh, the damaging force of a fire. One of the Avos Nezikin, which is what's relevant to Beis HaMikdash, was burnt down. So how do we classify the damage of Esh? If a person is liable for setting a fire, so it doesn't happen right away, or it may not happen right away. You may start a fire, and it may take an hour or two or three or days for the fire to do its damage. So how do you relate to that? Do you relate to that as, like, your property? Let's say I'm liable if my ox gores a china shop, so I'm liable for that. But clearly I didn't knock down the china shop. I own the ox. I'm liable for what it does. So therefore, it goes back to me. That's what we call mamono. Esh of Mishum mamono. The fire is like his property. It's like his animal that got loose. Or do we say, no, it's more direct than that. It's as if I am doing something. I set the fire, it caused damage. It's really happening at my hand, not just as my property that I'm liable for. And we say, Esh of Mishum Chetziv. It's like an arrow. If I shoot an arrow, it takes a few seconds. Or in a modern context, if I shoot a bullet or I shoot a missile. So it takes a few seconds or minutes for it to reach its target. But it's happening as my action. It's not like I set the bullet loose and let it do something on its own. I shot the bullet. So Rabbi Yochanan's view is that Esh of Mishum Chetziv, that fire is essentially your action directly. So therefore, it basically goes back to its initial moment when I set the fire. So you would ask, maybe then Rabbi Yochanan himself, who votes for the 10th, he really should vote for the 9th, because he should say that it should all go back to when the fire was set, and therefore he should agree the 9th of Av should be the date. So why does he himself vote for the 10th? So that will be our cliffhanger we'll pick up tomorrow, and we'll try to explain that. You'll have to think about it all day, and we'll try to explain that and look a little bit more at how that may characterize some elements of Tisha B'Av. So have a wonderful day within the context of 9 days, whatever that means. Productive day, and Be'ez Hashem, I'll see you tomorrow morning.